The next song and clip is taken from the movie Brother Sun, Sister Moon.
No. Selfish misery, brother wind and sister air, open my eyes to visions pure and fair, that I may see the glory around me. I am God's creature. Of him I am part. I feel his love awakening my heart. Brother sun and sister moon, I now do see you. I can hear your tune. So much in love with all that I survey.
Well, our topic today is Brother Sun, Sister Moon, taken from that movie and the canticle of St. Francis of Assisi. And I really looked around, but I don't have any funny stories to share about the sun or the moon. And when I was putting this PowerPoint and everything else together, in preparation for the service today, I really had a lot of fun exploring and deciding what to put in and what to omit. And then I thought, since Francis of Assisi is the patron saint of animals, I thought maybe a story from the archives of animal stories by the late Larry Lujak might be fun. But when I looked into it, they all seem to have not good things happen to animals. And it's kind of weird how something that I thought was hilarious 50 years ago, today not so much. You rarely will hear mention of a saint from a Catholic tradition in a Unity church. And that includes Unity of Fox Valley. Because without question, our focus is much more toward new Christian thought. However, first and foremost, we are all about inclusivity. And just as we recognize and respect biblical characters, so we look, we listen, and hopefully we learn from those who have gone before us, even in the Middle Ages. Besides, when Mary and I got together to work on this Sunday service, all of the stars seemed to come together. Yesterday, we had our pet blessing, which, by the way, was a wonderful event. And Francis of Assisi is the patron saint of animals. And today, October 4th, is the actual feast day of St. Francis on traditional church calendars, something I was completely unaware of when we picked the title for today's talk. The life of Francis of Assisi is really kind of interesting. He was Italian and born into a family that was pretty well off. His father was a wealthy cloth merchant. And as a young man, Francis fought in a war. He ended up getting captured and was held prisoner for almost a year. And when he was released, he became seriously ill, but did recover. And I don't know how much those experiences went into the change, the metamorphosis that Francis experienced. But as I said, he really had an interesting life. His father desperately wanted him to come into the family business, but Francis just wasn't having any of it. He embarked upon a journey, going by foot from Assisi to Rome for the purpose of joining a religious movement. And on his way there, he had a mystical experience, the first of several. And the still small voice that he heard told him to rebuild a church, but much more significantly, to renounce materialism, dedicate himself to a life of poverty, and to spend his life working with the poor. He ended up denouncing the lavishness of his own church. In fact, he openly criticized the church for its wealth in a world in which so many people were poor and hungry, in a world in which so many people were sick and struggling. And his words and actions earned him a nickname, Poverello, which meant the poor little rich man. And I don't know if it's true or not, but there's a fascinating anecdote that I found in his biography. At one point, his father was so unhappy with the direction that Francis's life had taken that he called Francis to a meeting before the Bishop of Assisi. And before anybody spoke a word, Francis peeled off his clothes. He stripped naked to make a point. He looked at his father and said, "Until now, I have called you father. But henceforth, I could only say, Our Father, who art in heaven." Well, needless to say, after that meeting is over, I doubt seriously that the bishop said anything like, "Well, okay, that went well." Francis must have been charismatic because he attracted thousands of followers. He was the leader of a movement of poverty in the 13th century. He founded not one, but three religious orders, including the Women's Order of St. Clair. And I have to admit, I have a personal attraction toward St. Francis. When I was a young boy, I attended St. Boniface, a Catholic school in the city. And back in those days, most Catholic schools still were taught by nuns, and the nuns at St. Boniface happened to be Franciscans. They were superb educators who not only taught us, but more importantly, loved us. And I want to share with you a story. Our grammar school class was really pretty rough and tough. When we were in eighth grade, our class literally drove poor Sister Theon, that we not so respectfully nicknamed Sister Tilly, but we literally drove Sister Theon to a nervous breakdown in which she actually had to be hospitalized for a couple of weeks. The class just was rowdy and didn't listen. And back in those days, nuns on occasion would still give a whack or two to a student that may have been out of line. And I remember I watched Sister Theon go thundering down the aisle a couple of times and give a whack to boys who were being disruptive. And one day, a girl in class was acting up. And Sister Theon made a beeline. She made her way down the aisle toward that girl. And just as she got to the girl's desk, the girl stood up, looked Sister Theon right in the face, and said, "You touch me, old lady, and I'm going to flatten you." True story. But the real backbreaker, the real kicker, was when two couples, four students, eighth grade students, were caught fornicating upstairs in the condemned auditorium. Poor Sister Theon, she just couldn't take it. She didn't even make it to Halloween that year. And by the way, the rest of the class wasn't happy about that whole auditorium business either, because the pastor, Father Rocky, took away our class picnic as a punishment for the entire class. So Sister Theon ended up being replaced by Sister Anna Rita. Sister Anna Rita had been our teacher the previous year in seventh grade, and she had a much different approach. She didn't ever, ever, ever hit. She hugged. A couple of times when a boy in class was creating problems, she called him to the front of the class and just gave him a big, fat hug. That pretty much kept that boy in line going forward. In fact, it had an effect that kept everybody in line going forward, because nobody wanted to be called to the front of the room and hugged. And right from the start, Sister Anna Rita gave us instructions that we should go home and tell our parents, "Do not worry about us while we were in school," because she was our mother from 9 to 3. She loved us profusely, including 3 girls that were pregnant before graduation. I said it really was a rough class. And I swear to you, all of this is true, especially the most important part. We not only learned the school subjects before the year was over, we learned that we were lovable. Even the toughest guys in our class came away feeling some sense of being loved, some sense of self-worth. And I share all of this with you this morning because, looking back, I believe that Sister Anna Rita stepped up at a most difficult time and took her call, her ministry, very seriously. Her joy in life was to include every one of us, regardless of our background, and we really were a very diverse group. We were accepted completely, and she did not hold back at all. Of course, I have no idea what the still small voice may have whispered to her when she was praying, but I'm sure of one thing. Whatever it was, she said, yes. As a Franciscan nun, she would have made the order's namesake proud. I have no idea today how much of what I've shared with you about Francis of Assisi is fact and what might be myth, but it really doesn't matter. The power of the scriptures isn't related so much to whether or not they literally are true, but rather in the deep metaphysical meanings in which the love of God is revealed to us. And in researching for this talk today, I came across one line in the brief biographical summary of Francis of Assisi. And that line was simply this: Francis of Assisi was devoted to the human Jesus. Let it sink in what those words are saying. He was devoted to the human Jesus. It was a devotion that motivated him, inspired him to follow through Jesus' example and reinforced important developments in medieval spirituality. And I interpreted that line to mean that Francis of Assisi made a real difference in the world, and he did so by being the change that he wanted the world to be. There were no apparent drastic dramatics in his life. Well, except maybe going stark naked in front of the bishop. He wasn't a politician. He didn't run for office. He didn't lead any kind of political movement. He never sought after personal financial gain. On the contrary, his quest was just the opposite. He took everything that he had and he gave it away. He sold it and he gave the money to the poor. He was impassioned by the person of Jesus. And like Jesus, he went about his business listening to our Father and just doing those things that he felt that he was called to do. This should be sounding at least a bit of a bell in our heads. I mean, we in Unity very regularly refer to Jesus as our way shower. And then after that, I think very often we just tend to go in a direction that is very intellectual or maybe even a bit dismissive, as we don't spend a lot of time giving much thought to what that means, how that should translate out in our lives. What exactly is the way that we think has been shown to us? And by the way, it is interesting that the early Christian movement way back in the first century was called exactly that, the way. But what should that way mean to us? I believe that it's a question that we should be praying every day, and that the answer should be one that comes first to our hearts and then only to our heads. What would Jesus do? People think that that's a modern phrase, but that's a phrase that goes all the way back to the late 1800s. It had a very significant resurgence that went viral in the 90s and actually went viral internationally. And personally, I like it. I think it's a good question to ask after pausing first in response to a situation. When something comes at us, and this happens to all of us all of the time, where we're really uncertain, we really don't know how we should be reacting or acting, what word should come out of our mouth. So I think asking that question, what would Jesus do? What would be the loving thing to do? And as I said, it needs to be answered first in our hearts before our minds. Francis, acting in response to what he heard to be his call in life, was all in. You know, yesterday we had their pet blessing, and the life expectancy of animals and cats in particular came in, and somebody, I believe it was Alex, shared the understanding that when you take on a pet, you're in it for the long haul. And it's so true. You know, the measure of a commitment is based upon how deeply it resides in your heart. And Francis saw himself in communion with the world. His path was a path of worldliness. Not worldliness in the negative sense that we have come to regard that word, but he looked at all of nature, the sun, the moon, the wind, the rain, every plant, every animal, every person, everything as a blessing, and the reality in the knowing that it's all God, and that everything that we are surrounded by, everything that we are immersed in, is a gift from God. He thought felt and he acted in a way that glorified, honored, and respected everyone and everything. And he dedicated his life to the poor, where he thought that he was most needed. He just went all in on trying to help those that were sick and ill. He was completely absorbed in his life mission. And those that knew him from early on didn't see his worth. His friends, and as we have shown, his family, they were critical of him. And when Francis renounced his wealth, everybody thought that he had gone crazy, totally lost his mind. And he shared the hurt of that message with his close friend, Claire. He told her, "People are saying I am mad." But Claire understood and told him, "No, you were mad before." It's a very tough place to be. Nobody wants to be criticized. Nobody wants to be talked about disparagingly. How often do we tiptoe around a really delicate situation? How often do we button our lips in the face of an injustice or fail to respond in any way when somebody tells a joke or makes a comment that dehumanizes a person or dehumanizes a people? Even when we ourselves are being attacked, it's just so easy to sit back and to take it. And how often have we blown opportunities in our life? How often have we walked by a homeless person with some shame? I share with you a time where a group of us were walking to go to a dinner. We were in Las Vegas, and we were approached by a street person with a cup who said, "Would you please help fight hunger?" And somebody in our party gave the response, the smart aleck response, "I am fighting hunger. I'm going to dinner." There were people around who heard the comment and laughed, but it wasn't very funny. Our way shower Jesus, in one of the Beatitudes, said, "Blessed are those who are persecuted for the sake of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." To the extent that we actually dwell in the kingdom of heaven, to the extent that we have an awareness, that consciousness, that the kingdom of heaven is within us, and we really try to be in that emotional, loving, accepting place, at some point, we should be at least raising an eyebrow or two on the part of people reacting to us. Jesus also said, "I have come to turn a man against his father, a daughter against her mother, a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law." You cannot live a life and be serious about moving along your spiritual path without on occasion being ridiculed or laughed at. You can't live a life in which you respond to the call to be the best Christ that you could be, the Christ within, and not ruffle some feathers. Just look at the name calling, the criticism, the disrespect that fills our political arena today, that fills our world today. There's so much lack of patience involved. It's really difficult to imagine what the world must have been like in the year 1200. That was about the time that Francis was rolling up his sleeves and going to work. And he started doing his thing. And here we are, 820 years later. People still are hungry. People still get sick. People still are hurting in so many ways. In the words of Jesus, that the poor will always be with you, just rings so true. And our technology and our advances notwithstanding, we are right smack dab in the middle of a pandemic. We are deeply immersed in a political environment where respect, despite differences, has become laughable. Do we feel an innate sense of responsibility for those who are different from us, or for the poor, or for the people that are hurting in any way, shape, or form? Are we called to provide for the sick more or less than we were 800 or 2,000 years ago? We all share the gift of life, but we all have different lives. We wear different lens because no two life experiences are the same. And this applied to our way show of Jesus as well, and it applied to this 13th century character that I've been talking about so much today. Truly, though, the specifics are secondary. Jesus, the man, Jesus, the person, was all in. And by being all in and devoting his awareness to become who he was, he unleashed his divinity. He unleashed the Christ within. Francis obviously tried to do the same. This morning, I certainly am not suggesting that you emulate Thomas of Assisi by removing your clothing in front of a bishop. He couldn't respond to his call, however, without shedding what was holding him back. Metaphysically, stripping himself of his clothing symbolized a letting go of what was keeping him from manifesting his Christ light. My gentle call to you today is to pray. And when you pray, be deliberate. Take care in prayer to ask what the barriers in your life might be. Barriers that keep you from saying yes to the oneness that you share with nature, that you share with all life and with one another. And maybe these aren't things that are related to money or clothing or possessions or wealth. Maybe these barriers that are holding you down and really keeping you from answering your call are barriers of thoughts in your head, thoughts in your mind that you hold that just no longer have applicability. Maybe they're blind spots that don't allow us to see another human being and really able to say and mean the expression, namaste, I behold the divine in you. What is it that keeps you from sharing the oneness with your own self? And you know what? Really asking that question is the hard part. Deciding what you're going to do with the answer, maybe it's a teensy bit easier. What a crazy, crazy year 2020 is. And we still have almost 3 full months to go through. Impeachments, a pandemic, bitter political battles, appointments to the Supreme Court, and an election that's coming up that really is, in many ways, incredibly significant, possibly the most significant one that we will face in our lives. And I'm not here to beat any political drums, but I am asking you to be involved, not just with the election, but be involved in going down that path and asking the question and really paying attention to what the still small voice may be whispering to you. I'm asking you to take seriously, catch on phrase, be the change you want the world to be. And now let's take this to prayer and meditation. Mm-hmm.